Well, I'm Aaron from Richard from Aaron, and I'm going to talk to you about the depletion of the IPv4 resource, when that's happening, why that's happening, other little things that surround that issue, and the need to adopt IPv6. Before I get started, I'm interested in knowing how many people in here have deployed IPv6 on their network or their service. Raise your hand, please. All right, got a few of you here. So bear with us. You guys are ahead of the curve right now. But the rest of you, there's a need to be looking at IPv6 adoption, and I'm going to tell you why. Before I get started, I want to let you know where I'm from, who Aaron is. For those of you who aren't aware, Aaron is a nonprofit organization. We're a regional internet registry. We're one of five of them. There are five nonprofit organizations worldwide that manage the distribution of the IP address space for their region. Aaron's service region is North America and portions of the Caribbean. Aaron is the successor registry to Network Solutions Internet, started operations in 1997. All we do is manage the distribution of the IP address space, autonomous system numbers. We run the WHOIS services, and we run other services, inadder.arpa, things like that for you. But we're here to talk about IPv4 depletion. Now, before I get started too much here, most of you are already aware of this, but we have IPv4 address space. We've been using that for decades to grow the internet. And we have IPv6 address space. So back in the early 1990s, when the commercial internet started to deploy rapidly, the Internet Engineering Task Force came together and said, you know what? IPv4 was not designed for, was not intended for a global commercial internet. And they knew that IPv4 would not satisfy the needs of a global commercial internet going forward into the future. And they made some predictions about when we would run out of that resource. And strangely enough, the predictions they made are right around now. So they immediately began working on the next version of the internet protocol in the mid-1990s, and that ended up being IP version 6. They had that protocol ready in 1999. They issued 1/8 of the entire IPv6 address space to the Internet Assigned Numbers Authority so that they can allocate that down to those five regional internet registries that I had on the first slide, so that we can allocate it then down to you. We've been issuing the IPv6 address space since 1999. There hasn't been a whole lot of uptake for IPv6. Early on, a lot of people predicted that the only thing that would drive IPv6 adoption was the full depletion of the IPv4 resource. And those people were pretty much right. Because here we are about a year from running out of that resource, and it's only now that companies are taking interest in IPv6 adoption. And these are the things that we're going to be talking about. So first, what's the status of the IPv4 free pool? The IANA holds the IPv4 free pool. They have 12/8s remaining in the free pool today. A /8 is approximately 16 million IPv4 addresses. They issue IPv4 address space in /8 blocks to the regional internet registries. So each time that we need additional address space to satisfy your needs, in our side of our service region, we go to the IANA and we request more. They give us one or two at a time, and we only have 12 of those left. You can see over the years how we've ran down that resource according to the demand inside of our regions. And by the way, when we issue this IPv4 address space out to you, the policies that we use to issue the resource are created by you, the community at large. You create the rules, you create the policies. Aaron is a secretariat staff of approximately 50 people that use those policies to distribute the resource back out to you. We manage the resource on your behalf as a public trust nonprofit organization. But here is where we stand. In 2010, the RIRs have been allocated 14/8 blocks by the IANA, according to our demand. And we have 12 of them left. So just this year, we've used 14 and we have 12 left. That address space is going to go pretty quickly. There is a large amount of demand in the Asia-Pacific region right now for IPv4 address space. It stayed steady for the most part of the last year or two inside the Aaron region, but it's shot up significantly over there. One of the reasons for this, speaking to my colleagues at APNIC, there are some very large economies over there. If you look at the populations inside China and India and some other countries in the Asia-Pacific region, their populations are enormous, and they have rapidly growing middle classes. With a rapidly growing middle class, of course, You need more residential broadband to people's homes because people can, of course, afford that and they want that in their homes, just like we have it in our homes, right? Everyone wants a mobile device, and these populations, they need the IPv4 address space in order to grow these services, these products and services. They don't have legacy /8s over there for the most part, like we have in North America that were issued in the 80s and the early 1990s that might be underutilized that they could take and put into utilization and satisfy those needs. They have to get new IPv4 address space to do that. It's very likely that this IANA free pool will fully deplete by the end of the first quarter next year. So we have 12 of them left, but there's a global policy that states when the IANA gets down to 5 remaining /8s, they will immediately stop. They will not issue any more address space to a requesting RIR, and they will take and give 1 each to the 5 RIRs, and then it will be fully depleted. The depletion event for IPv4 at the IANA will only happen once, of course, and it happens next year. There's no way that it will not happen next year unless demand falls off completely and abruptly, and we don't see that happening. So by the end of the first quarter next year, around that point, the IANA depletes. When the IANA free pool depletes, all we're left with is the inventories of the regional internet registries. Each RIR will hold anywhere from a single /8 to about 2 or 3 /8s. And depending on where we are in the request line for getting additional IPv4 address space from the IANA, Aaron could only have 1. For instance, if we were just reaching the point where we were going to request additional IPv4 address space and another registry got in before us and got the 6th and 7th /8 that was remaining and it brought it down to 5, all Aaron will get is 1, and that's what we're left with. Aaron's free pool of IPv4 address space will deplete anywhere between a day and about 6 months after receiving its last block of IPv4 address space from the IANA. And the reason I say this is because there may be a lot of pent-up demand out there for IPv4 address space that hasn't been realized through the request process right now. If you look at these real large organizations that are growing the residential broadband networks or their national business networks or they're growing their mobile handset networks, they need IPv4 address space to continue growing. And if they were to all come in at once, say the top 10 providers inside the United States and Canada came in at one time, and all Heron had left was a /8, they could submit enough request traffic in a single day that would account for everything that we have left, and it could go away that quickly. So I need to let you know that for the first time in history, next year, Aaron is going to have to say, no, we cannot issue additional IPv4 address space. We will receive a request from an organization that justifies the resource according to the documented policy that you've set as the community, and we're not going to have any more to give to you. That's going to happen for the first time next year. It's going to happen for larger providers first because we're going to run out of larger blocks first, and then we're going to be left with a bunch of fragmented 24s laying around, and then eventually we're going to issue those as well. But next year will be the depletion event of the IPv4 address space. It's been a long time in coming, but we're all going to be working in the industry when it happens. Now, a lot of people ask, well, what about all those underutilized blocks that are out there? What about all that address space that organizations are holding that they got back in the 1980s and the 1990s, and it may be underutilized? Well, we constantly are going out trying to reclaim unused blocks of IPv4 address space. /8s, there aren't many of them to contact, but we contact those organizations and say, hey, if you're not using all of this, it'd be a really good thing if you return this to the community. We also reach out to B holders. Almost impossible for us to hit every one of those C holders. There are so many registrants out there that got address space prior to Aaron's inception in 1997. But we're reaching out to them, and we're constantly reclaiming IPv4 address space. We just received a /8 back at Aaron last month. So we're this close to the depletion event, and organizations are still returning address Class A's back, Class B's back from the old legacy space. They're still doing it. But do not allow the fact that you see us getting address space back leads you to believe that the lifetime of the IPv4 free pool is going to be extended by much. And the reason I say that is you can see that we've gone through 14/8 so far this year. If we get another /8 back, it's not even going to last us a month. Getting an entire Class A back extends the free pool lifetime of IPv4 by a few weeks. We have to be looking at IPv6. I need to tell you about a /10 block that's specified in policy at Aaron. So in that /8 that we get at the very end from the IANA, when they hand us our last /8, Aaron's, we are to take a fourth of that, a /10, and set it aside for a special use case. The special use case is allocations for IPv6 transition only. So there are going to be organizations that have to deploy networks post IPv4 depletion, new networks. When they do this, they're going to have to do it with IPv6 if they can't get large blocks of IPv4 to do that. Now, in doing that, they're still going to need to have a presence on the IPv4 internet. So they're going to need a little bit of IPv4 address space for their DNS, for protocol translation services, and for other uses so that they can have a presence on the IPv4 network as well as the IPv6 network. And that's what this policy is for. And we'll be allocating blocks anywhere from a 28 to a 24 under this policy. So there will still be tiny bits of IPv4 address space remaining for you if you have new deployments coming up in the next few years, but you're not going to be getting large blocks like you're getting today from the registry system. We also have registration transfer policies for IPv4 at Aaron. We have this long-standing policy. It's called our M&A transfer policy, mergers and acquisitions. If you acquire an organization and they have a network and they have IP address space assigned to that network, you can have the IPv4 address space registration transferred to your organization's name just by showing us the legal documentation saying that there's been an acquisition or there's been a merger or some other type of legal transaction there. That's been in place since the late 1990s, that policy, and you've been able to use it since then. But the community had a decision point to make about 2 years ago, and that decision point was inside the policy community to either send the registries aggressively after legacy resource holders to try to reclaim as much IPv4 as possible, or to create a policy that would allow those organizations that had unused portions of their IPv4 address space to be able to return that to Aaron and designate who we assign it out to. So basically, create a market for IPv4 address space. The community chose the latter. The reason they chose the latter, through a good 1.5 years of discussion, of back and forth, they decided that we could not get a sizable enough amount of IPv4 address space back to make a significant difference in extending the lifetime of the IPv4 free pool. So if we were to get 8/8s back in total, which would be an enormous feat for a registry, it still only extends the free pool lifetime for IPv4 of about 5 to 6 months. And they knew that. So they created a policy that's going to allow you to take your unutilized block or your underutilized block and return a portion of that to the registry. This is what the policy says. Return a portion of that block to the registry and designate who we assign it out to immediately. The recipient organization still has to show that they justify that resource according to the policies that are set by the community. So it'll look something like this. A requesting organization will come into Aaron and request IPv4 address space. Aaron will tell that organization that they justify what they're requesting, but that we don't have additional IPv4 address space to give them. We will let them know that if there's another organization out there that may have resources available for them, that they could get it from them. They will find an organization. That organization will return, let's say, a /20 to Aaron and say, we want you to allocate this immediately out to XYZ organization. Aaron will do that. This policy says that we'll do that, and that's what we'll be doing post IPv4 depletion at the registry. There will likely be money exchanged for these resources inside the community. Aaron will not become part of any financial transaction between organizations that are transferring address space between each other. All we're doing is getting involved in updating the registration database and who is so that it properly reflects the registrant of the resource. The community has asked us to stand up a listing service, a bare bones listing service, where Aaron will provide a space where an organization that needs IPv4 address space can identify themselves on this service. And an organization that has available space to transfer to organizations to identify themselves and the size blocks that they have available. We've stood up this service. People are already using it. We've had to contact organizations that are listing themselves as having a need to say, you do realize that you can still get the resource from the registry and satisfy the request that way. But we expect this to be a very popular service. It doesn't preclude organizations from making themselves known to an organization that might receive address space from them in other ways, though. It's something the community asks us to stand up. So this is what we're dealing with. We are running out of IPv4 address space next year. It's going to happen. It's not a myth. It's not a cry wolf thing. I knew some of you in this room heard in the early 1990s that we're running out of IPv4 address space. And then CIDR happened. And then RFC 1918 happened. And all of the NATs that we do today happened. And then in the early 2000s, you heard, oh no, we're running out of the IPv4 address space, because the IETF released production IPv6 to the registries through the IANA. And there were a lot of organizations that were out there that were giving you misinformation. They were telling you, we're running out of IPv4 next year. And the next year would get here and they'd say, well, we're running out next year. And they would do this, and they had an IPv6 service to offer to you. It was not the registries making those statements in the early 2000s, but a lot of you heard that we were running out in the early 2000s. It didn't happen. So now we'll go out, we'll stand on a booth, or we'll speak to people at an audience like this, and we'll have people say, I've been hearing this for 10, 15 years. Why should I be listening to you now and believing that this is happening next year? Because we're the registry. We have absolutely nothing to gain from giving you misinformation about this. We're an independent nonprofit organization that represents this resource administration for you, and we're telling you it's running out at the current rate of distribution next year, and it is. A new demand surge could deplete this resource much quicker than I just described. For instance, if you take LTE services are being released, are being deployed, all of these mobile providers, not just in the United States, not just in Canada, but all over the world, are rolling out fourth generation data services. We're moving from a point where there's a separation on our device right now between the voice and the data applications that are on it, to everything just being data in a lot of these fourth generation networks for these mobile providers. They need IP address space to do this. Some of them are going to do it with IPv6, others are going to do it with IPv4, and there is absolutely nothing that we can do to prevent them from using the IPv4 resource to do this. It is freely available to them according to policy, and that's the way it is. If they came in today and said, I have 8, 9, 10 million subscribers, and we're rolling out this new data service in the next couple of months, and with that will be these new handsets that require many more unique IPv4 addresses than we have today, we will assign that IPv4 address space to that organization. And then if all their peers do the same thing, we could deplete the IPv4 resource in a couple of months, completely, just with that. You've got contracts being issued by federal governments to do things like smart grid. Now, the people who are deploying these networks inside the states, they have a choice. They can either piggyback on top of networks that are already delivered to people's homes and do smart grid that way, or they can create their own network. A lot of them are going to create their own network. If they create their own network, they're going to need IPv4 address space to do that. Those are just two examples of what could happen over the next couple of months. So keep your eyes on this, and I'm going to give you some resource information on how you can do that. We're going to have to maintain IPv4 and IPv6 simultaneously for many years. We cannot just drop support for IPv4, and we will not do that. If you're a residential broadband provider, for instance, your customers are still going to Best Buy and other retailers today and buying devices and bringing them home and putting them on the network that only do IPv4. They do not do V6 because this consumer electronics vendor that they bought from doesn't have V6 on that product yet. As an ISP or as a residential provider, you're not going to go to that customer and tell them they can't use that in a couple months. You're going to continue to support that device. So you can deploy IPv6 to homes, and you can tunnel V4 over that. There's all kinds of interesting things that you can do. But as you're turning up new customers on the internet going forward in the next couple of years, you're going to continue to have to give them access to the IPv4 internet. That's where all the content is. Unless we can move 99.9% of the content there tomorrow and say we don't have to worry about it, they're going to have to continue to support IPv4 for a very long time. And we're not moving 99.9% of the content over to the V6 network tomorrow. It's just not going to happen. IPv6 deployment has begun. I want you to know that, because I talk to a lot of folks and they say, you know what, I don't hear my peers talking about it. I don't hear my provider talking about it. I don't hear anybody talking about this. So it's not happening. That's not true. This is not the early 1990s when the commercial internet was deploying for the very first time and we all stood to gain something by cooperating with one another, talking to each other about how we were deploying our IPv4 networks. We were all going to get rich. And a lot of you did, a lot of people did. And there was a lot of incentive for us to communicate with each other in a place like NANOG forums and other forums came into being. And we did that. Today, the networks are deployed. This is big business. It's about competition. And there's less of an incentive for you to share information with people about exactly what you're doing with IPv4. Let me give you an example. If you're a residential access provider, a residential broadband provider, in most metropolitan areas, a home has the option of 2 to 3 residential broadband providers. A residential broadband provider will know that there's a guaranteed demand for IPv6 and that it's not a joke. We really are running out of IPv4 and they need to do something about that. They will. They'll do something about it. They'll get themselves ready and they'll hope that their competitor doesn't do it or doesn't do as good of a job of doing it. And they will hope to gain market share when we run out of IPv4 address space and we reach a point where consumers start to notice changes on the network, and they will. And I'm going to explain that in a few minutes. Move that to another industry segment, a hardware manufacturer. There might be 2 or 3 strong competitors for a little consumer electronics device that gets put in people's homes and that even some small businesses use. One manufacturer is going to realize that there is a guaranteed demand for IPv6 in this product. They're going to put V6 support in that product. They're going to spin up marketing for this and customer support for this and everything else, but they're not going to deploy it yet. They're going to wait. And they're going to hope their competitor does nothing. And then when the time is right, they're going to market exactly what they've done, and they're going to deliver that product, and they're going to have customer support and services and everything stood up for it. If their competitor hasn't, they're going to eat market share. A lot of companies are doing this, so there's an incentive for them being quiet about what they're doing. So don't allow the silence when it comes to IPv6 deployment fool you into thinking that people aren't doing something about this. Another reason people aren't talking about it, if you're the first person in your peer group to do something new on the network, and you go ahead and you do that, and you're not real confident about your implementation, are you going to go tell everybody about it and draw criticism for what you've done? Some people do that on purpose because they know that they can improve their work that way. Other people don't want to draw that criticism. They're going to wait. They don't want to be first. They're going to wait for somebody else to jump out there and do it. People are doing this. Just because you don't hear other people talking about it, doesn't mean anything. You need to get started with this. We've been allocating IPv6 address space since 1999, April of 1999, for over 10 years. We've used those last 10 years as an industry to put IPv6 support in hardware and software that we need today to deploy IPv6. We couldn't have deployed IPv6 like we're going to over the next 2 years in 1999 and 2000. Because the hardware and software support wasn't there. Today, it's there for the most part, almost every place. There's still going to be places where the support isn't wonderful, the support isn't great, and you need to work with your vendors to get that there, but it's in a ready state right now. It's ready for you to deploy. Thousands of organizations have received IPv6 allocations to date. They're out there. You can go look at who is. It's all there. And we have distribution policies at Aaron for service providers, community networks, and end-user organizations. Anyone can get provider-independent IPv6 address space directly from the registry if they meet the policies set by you, the community. And they're all out there for you to see. I'd invite you to come get the resource if you need it. So what does this mean for all these different types of providers out there? And we've been talking to these types of organizations for the last couple of years now as a registry. And we've been doing that by speaking at events like this, by going to trade shows, by doing online interviews, doing all kinds of things, speaking to the press, speaking to the media, all these things that we never had to do as a registry up until about 2007. In 2007, the Aaron Board of Trustees issued a declaration stating to the community that we are running out of the V4 resource, there's a need for you to adopt IPv6, and they asked us to go talk to these types of organizations, and we've been doing that. This is what we've been saying to them. Broadband access providers, your customers want access to the entire internet. You need to give it to them. Going forward into the future, that means access to V4 and V6 networks. Residential access providers are doing this. They probably have one of the hardest roads to go down when it comes to V6 adoption. A residential access provider, most of them, or many of them, are in the case where they're going to have to replace every customer premise device that they have deployed. If you're a residential access provider and you have 8 million subscribers, you have to replace 8 million customer premise devices, cable modems, routers, whatever it is that you have sitting there, so that you can now deploy V4 and V6 to that customer. That's a lot of work. That's not a small feat. These guys are working on that, and they're doing it. And some of you have probably heard about public trials that are out there. As the registry, we know an awful lot about what organizations are doing with IPv6, because they come to us, they show justification for the resource, they give us their plans, they tell us what they're doing. I'm not allowed to talk to you about what they're doing, because we get that information under non-disclosure. I can only talk about what organizations have issued publicly themselves in press releases. Comcast came out with a press release not too long ago and said that they're doing public trials to people's residences with IPv6. They're running dual stack V6, V4 to people's homes. They're shipping people new cable modems, and they're running a public trial. How many people here have participated in a public trial by a residential access provider? So we've got two people that have participated so far in this public trial. Other organizations, in addition to Comcast, are likely going to be coming out talking about that soon, too. You know, I can't speak for them. But rest assured that these providers are working on this, and they've got an awful lot of work to do. Internet service providers. Small distinction between residential access providers and ISPs. I'm talking about an ISP that provides services to a business customer at their place of business. They have to deliver IPv6 to these customers as well. It's very important for providers, for internet service providers, if you haven't already started doing this, start speaking to your peers, start speaking to your vendors, anyone that supports the products that you have to deliver your services, and make sure that you have IPv6 support where you need it. Even if you're not going to start doing it tomorrow, if you got it on your plan and it's going to start on July 1st of next year, for instance, you have to start speaking to those vendors and those relative organizations that you have now. You have to do that today. Make sure that V6 is there and ready to go when you get there. Internet content providers. This is very important. Content providers need to take their content and dual stack that content. They need to retain it on the IPv4 network, of course, because it's not going away. And this is a little bit of religion for people, but it's probably going to be a decade or two before we even start to see IPv4 slide out. A lot of people think it'll happen in 5 years. Some people think it'll happen sooner than that. But who knows? It's really up to you guys to decide how that happens. But if you're a content provider, you need to start taking your content and placing it on the V6 network today. You're not going to have a whole lot of people going there today, but I guarantee you, inside of the next year or two, you're going to have people talking to you about it if you haven't done it yet. Your customers in particular. So you need to start putting that content on the V6 network. Enterprise customers. Well, we're not as aggressive with enterprise customers. So when enterprise customers, end user organizations, small, medium-sized organization, they'll hear on the news or they'll hear somebody else or they'll hear directly from Aaron or some other organization doing outreach on this topic saying, you need to do V6, you need to do V6. We'll often use the word transition when they do that. That's a scary word to an enterprise organization. When you hear the word transition, you're moving from one thing to another thing. Moving from one thing to another thing. And that's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is adoption of IPv6. End users should not be dropping support for IPv4. They should be adding support in certain places for IPv6. I often have end user organizations come and say, oh, I've got this user network of several hundred computers, and then I'm running a mail server and a web server and a few other servers, and that's it. Do I have to go change all this to V6? And the answer, depending on who they are and what they're doing, is often no. Just leave your V4 network in place. Perhaps take your mail server, your web server, your DNS, dual stack those services so that they do V4 and V6. Make sure you read some best practices information up on that, and you do it the right way and you get that done. But for your V4 network, just leave it numbered, V4. And if there's a need for your V4 clients to reach V6-only content that may be published, just put a device on your network somewhere that works just like a NAT box does today that moves you from a private address to a public V4 address and do a translation from V4 to V6. Temporarily hand off that client a V6 address so that it go out on the V6 internet, grab the content that it needs, comes back, and then goes back into your V4 network. There are ways that you can do that, and that's probably the better way to go early on. Equipment vendors. If you're an equipment vendor and you have an IP stack on your product and there's not IPv6 support there yet, you have to get started immediately. You may not hear a whole lot of demand today from your customers for IPv6, but it's going to hit you like a fire hose next year. As soon as this thing hits mainstream media, and by the way, it hasn't hit mainstream media yet. It's going to. It hasn't yet. As soon as it hits it, every customer that you have is going to call you and say, is there IPv6 support in this? Or they're going to be looking on your website or someplace else. If you're behind the curve and you do not have IPv6 support ready, it's going to hurt you. You need to get started right now. Now, just a little bit about these equipment vendors. We do a lot of trade shows, Aaron. Over the last couple of years, we've done a lot of them. Not too long ago, Aaron Booth, next to Aaron, is a vendor. I can't tell you who the vendor is, but it's a vendor. And people were coming to the Aaron booth, and we're telling them about V4 depletion, the need to adopt IPv6, and all of these things. And they would leave our booth, and they would walk next door to the vendor, and they would ask them about IPv6 support in their product. And I heard this person tell the first person, you're the first person that's ever asked about this. We'll check into it, and I'll get back to you. Can I have your business card? Or can I scan you? Well, second person walked over, and the vendor said, you're the first person that's ever asked about this. That person did this all day, and without, you know, breaking stride. You're the first person that's ever asked me about that. And he said it all day. So we got to the end of the day. I walked next door, and I said, I can't help the fact that I've overheard you say to at least 50 people that asked you about IPv6 that they were the first person that ever asked you about it. The guy blushed a little bit, and he said, yeah, you know, he was a salesperson, by the way. He said, my company's working on this. It's not ready yet. They haven't given me definitive information on what I should be saying to customers about IPv6 support. I'm being put in a position where I really don't know what to say to people, so that's what I'm telling them. And I'm at least getting their contact information so I can contact them back with better information later. Now, when those people were walking over to that booth, they were listening to Aaron, and they were walking next door to that booth having that vendor say, you're the first person that's ever asked about this. How many other organizations have told them that? There is a perception out there that IPv6 is not deploying. It's not true. It is deploying. It's just that people have reasons not to talk about it. I want to go back real quick to broadband access providers. Since I'm using examples here, Aaron was at a show a few weeks ago. We were at a show called the Game Developers Conference Online. And we were there talking to game development companies and the vendors that support them, that actually publish their games and that deliver their content online for them, about IPv4 depletion and IPv6 adoption. They're very interested in latency when it comes to the delivery of their services. And they were asking an awful lot of questions about latency. They wanted to know what carrier-grade NAT was. They've been hearing about this thing called carrier-grade NAT. Now, if you're a residential broadband access provider, going forward into the future, you have to continue to provide IPv4 support to your customers, period. You have to do it somehow. And the way they're being forced into doing that, because we're running out of the IPv4 resource, is whereas today, on the WAN side of the device that they have at your house, you have a unique IPv4 address, that's going to cease. What they're going to have to do is when they can no longer get IPv4 address space from Aaron, they have to continue turning on new customers. They're going to be giving them V4 and V6. But V4, they can't get new V4 addresses. They're going to take away the uniqueness of your IPv4 address at your house, and they're going to take you and they're going to place you into a NAT pool. And they're going to share that IPv4 address across several residences. And at first, it might just be a handful for a single IP address, and then it'll grow to a larger number. As they add new customers, past the point of IPv4 depletion, the NAT pools are going to grow larger and larger and larger. You guys know, you guys are network administrators. Anytime that you take an additional device and you put it between the client and the server, it adds overhead costs when it comes to latency. It's going to slow things down a little bit. A lot of these residential access providers are testing latency-sensitive applications over their carrier-grade NAT networks today. And what they're finding is the latency is increasing, and in some cases, significantly. So we were at a show where we were speaking to organizations that are very latency-sensitive, and they were very concerned about this. I walked away from that show with a stack of business cards like this of game development companies, their publishers, and their vendors that want to speak to broadband access providers that are conducting testing over their NATed V4 networks. They want to see what that looks like, and they want to talk about putting their content up on the V6 network. These organizations believe that latency is going to increase for their customers. That's going to become a problem. And the only way they're going to get latency back down to an acceptable level is by deploying their services end-to-end over V6 from the server to the client, vice versa. So they're looking at this and they're working on it. These are the types of discussions that are going on right now. These are the types of things that are happening. But if you have any latency-sensitive applications that you use out on the internet from your home, and you have a unique IPv4 address assigned to you right now, and that uniqueness goes away, you could see slowly over time latency start to pick up, and it might reach an unbearable point. And you need to be speaking to your internet service provider about that. And at some point, it doesn't even help to speak to your internet service provider about it, because your service provider is going to tell you, hey, I've deployed V6 to your house. You've got V6. You've got V4. The V4 is kludgy. I'm sorry, but we've ran out of the resources. There's nothing that we can do about that. Go talk to your content provider about putting their content on the V6 network. That's what they're eventually going to start telling you. And you might want to start doing that. Start talking to your content providers about it and asking them questions about it. Right now, you're not having the problem. You don't see the problem right now, but you're going to have the problem soon. There's a role for government in all of this. So governments around the world have done different things. In the case of the United States has made some mandates when it comes to IPv6 over the years about their own adoption of IPv6 for federal agencies. And they've done some work with that, and they've gotten more aggressive about that in recent years. There was a federal meeting about a month or 2 months ago where the U.S. government CIO and CTO came together with industry and some other folks and talked a little bit about it. And they're putting together some other types of mandate situations for folks to talk to them about adoption of IPv6. The federal government released a new rule in the federal acquisition regulations in December of last year, a rule that took effect on July 1st of this year that states any federal agency that will be awarding a contract to a contractor for a product or service that works on the IP network, it must support IPv6, or that federal agency may not award the contract to that organization unless they go through a waiver process to be able to make the award. So that's in place right now. You got stuff like that going on right now. But the main role of government has been awareness, just getting the word out there, talking to people about this. How many people have actually seen or talked to Aaron in the last couple of years at a booth or at one of these types of events before? Raise your hand. I'm glad we're reaching new people today. How many people have seen this on the news, like broadcast news, anything about IPv6 in the broadcast news? Got one person there. How many people have read about IPv6 in trade publications? Just about everybody, right? The trade press has picked this topic up in spades. They've been talking about it for years. They know it's an issue, they know it's a problem, and they've been talking to you about it in their trade publications. That's wonderful. We've been working hard to also get, these are an example of some of the trade publications that have picked up this topic recently and over the years. We've been working hard to try to get the mainstream media to pick this topic up too. And they've done it on a very limited basis. You will hear about this topic from the media very soon, from the mainstream media very soon. Now, kind of leading up to that, though, these are the types of events that we go to, the types of organizations that we talk to. We're trying to reach as many people as we can. Since the mainstream media will not pick this topic up and run with it, we've basically been left as an industry to fend for ourselves to get the word out here. Because usually people get the word through mainstream media and other sources like that. We've been going to events like this and talking to people. We've been speaking to trade press and getting the word out there. And it's not just Aaron, by the way, that's doing this. There are other organizations that are aggressively working to get the word out about B4 depletion, the need to adopt IPv6. When we started this work in 2007, and what started it was this declaration by the Aaron Board of Trustees saying that, hey, you guys need to get out there and start talking to people about this. In 2007, we would show up at shows and give presentations and do things, and there was laughter and denial. There was a lot of denial. What we heard from most people was, B4 is not going to deplete. I've been hearing about this for years. It's not going to happen. V6 is never going to deploy even after we run out of IPv4 because we're just going to V4 NAT the internet way off into the future, and we'll never deploy IPv6. And some people still believe that today. And there's who knows? Could happen. We'll see, right? But there was a lot of laughter. We had people laugh at us. They're like, that's not going to happen. And they, what are you guys doing here? Why are you even here talking to people about this? It's ridiculous. 2008 started to shift a little bit. People were skeptical. They would come up and say, yeah, well, just let me hear what you have to say. And they would listen. But they're like, I'm not sure. 2009, despair and anger. People were pissed off. Why were they pissed off? Because they realized it was really happening and that there was something that they had to do. Now think about it. Say you're there's probably some systems administrators in here, right? So say you're a lead admin for your organization, or you're the only admin, or one of two, or something like that for your organization. You're the guy, you're the gal. You're the person that makes stuff work. Your capital is way up here. You know it. And everyone that you work for or work around knows it too. You gotta do something new now. You gotta go do V6. Where does your capital go? It goes way down here. You're with everybody else, and maybe you got to build that back up. Who wants to do that? Nobody wants to do that. These people were pissed off. Or it might have been the executive that realized there was a lot of capital expenditures that were about to happen, and they weren't happy about that. Well, depending on how far back you started, it could have cost you less than it would if you start tomorrow at the end and do it after it's too late. Probably have to spend more money that way. But people were upset because they realized that there was work that needed to be done. 2010, most of this year, most people accept the fact that we're running out of IPv4 and that they need to adopt IPv6 in the very near future if they haven't done that already. They're doing it. They understand it. They're doing it. And they're moving forward. There's still some folks out there that may not have heard so much about this or don't realize how dire the situation is. But most people have picked up on this, and they're moving forward with it. Again, this is some of the folks that have covered the topic. These organizations have covered the topic very well. Very glad that they've done that. They've done a wonderful job. We've had some rare success getting the topic in other places. For instance, it was carried on the front page of CNN recently. They ran an article that said the internet addresses are running out. They were very kind in the way that they did this. The Fox News Channel did a segment at 7 p.m. prime time during the week, about a year ago. What they did is they sent a camera crew to the Aaron offices. And they filmed our CEO talking about V4 depletion and V6 adoption for about an hour, John Curran, for about an hour. They also went and they filmed Vint Cerf and a bunch of other people. They ran the segment, and the segment was about 10 minutes long. It was 9.5 minutes of the reporter grandstanding about all the things that he knew, and most of it was wrong. And it was about 30 seconds of video snippets of John Curran, Vint Cerf, and other people talking about it. That's how the news media covers this. Now, when the mainstream news media picks this topic up next year and they're going to do it, it's not going to be a kind pickup. Somebody's got to be dying, somebody's got to be bleeding for mainstream media to pick something up. When they pick this topic up next year, it's going to be because you guys are doing something wrong. You guys messed up the internet. Aaron's messed up the internet. You guys have messed up the internet. Everybody's messed up the internet. We've got all these problems. How come we haven't heard about this before? And what's going on? The person that, maybe you think it's me, I don't know, maybe it's somebody else that you've gone and you've heard talk about this topic before, that's completely screwed the topic up, has no clue what they're talking about, that's the guy that's going to be sitting on TV talking about it. That's the guy that's going to find his way there and is going to be sitting there talking about it. It's going to be a mess. So it's going to take all of us turning that around, speaking to the media, talking to the press, speaking to our peers, getting the message straight, letting folks know exactly what's going on. There's going to be a lot of misinformation out there, but it is going to be picked up by the mainstream media. Your customers are going to be calling you and talking to you about this. If you work inside an enterprise organization, your executives are going to be coming down and talking to you about this because they're going to see it on the news, even though you've been telling them about it for years, right? If they see it on the news, it's different. If you're the executive, that email that you got from your technical staff 2 years ago telling you about this, dig it up. Award them something. Say, I'm sorry we didn't do something about this. Let's get to work. Let's do this. Start working on this stuff. But the news media is going to pick it up big next year. Now, we've got a few resources available to help you out between now and then. If you wanted to take, for instance, this presentation or some other resource from Aaron and go inside your own organization and give a presentation about this, we'll support you. If you want to take this information and go to another show, like this one, and compete with me to get on the stage, to get an agenda spot, you can do that. I welcome you to do that. If you can get on the agenda, great. We'll provide materials for you to help you do that. We have an extensive slide deck that we update every time the status of the IPv4 prepool has changed just a little bit. We update this slide deck. It has a very extensive set of speaker notes to help you deliver it. You could take it anywhere. You could use it in full, or you could use it in part of your own presentation. Use it any way that you'd like. We've got this resource called teamaaron.net. This is an outreach site where people are going to get information about V4 depletion, V6 adoption, what the current information is. We're doing a lot of social media there. We're doing blogging there about this stuff. This is where we've got the public use slide deck that I just described. If you're going to go to an event where there's 50 people and you're going to stand on stage and you're going to present on this topic, we will send you literature, IPv6 stickers, all kinds of other things to help support the event for you. You can go to this website, you can fill out a form and hit submit. Basically tell us who you are, where you're speaking, the dates, where you need the stuff shipped to, and we will send you a shipment of materials to support your speaking event. We're also running an IPv6 wiki. This wiki is a place where people are going to upload their deployment experiences when it comes to V6. Hasn't been used as much as we'd like for some of the reasons we've already described earlier, but we'd like more people to come here and use this. There's already some information out there. There's some good information out there. A lot of great information about where to get started with your IPv6 deployments. You know, what worked, what didn't, those types of things. Go there and check it out. Aaron runs it. We're a nonprofit organization. We're keeping large vendors out of this, trying to push products or solutions on you. It's not that type of thing. It's just peer information being shared, and vendors are welcome to share peer information there, of course. We've got some other links here that you can go to and find out information about this. I've talked to you about the Aaron Board resolution. You can go and check that out and see exactly what that said in 2007. Letter to CEOs. Now, of course, we have sent an email about IPv4 depletion to every technical point of contact in our database over the years. We've contacted everyone at some point and said, hey, this is happening. You need to hear this straight from us that it is happening. The community wanted us to do more. They said, well, it's not, I know this, but I'm hitting this brick wall when I go to my executives and try to talk to them about this, and they don't want to talk about this. Can you contact them? So we did. So what we did is we took every IPv4 registrant in Aaron who is, and we did some research to find a lead executive inside that organization, and we sent certified postal snail mail to that lead executive in that organization. It was a one-page letter that said, we're running out of IPv4 address space. This is real. You have to do IPv6. This is why. And here's some resource links. How many people here knows that either they or someone inside the organization got that letter? Could you raise your hand? We've got two, three. The Aaron community asked us to do this again. We're going to be doing this again. It's going to be a follow-up letter, and we're going to do it again. Many of you may not have IPv4 address space directly from the registry, which would prevent us from sending this letter to you. But please take this information and move forward with it. I'm almost ready to close here. I just wanted to give you one other example of this brick wall. I was at a trade show about a year and a half ago. And this is a trade show where there's a lot of executives from companies at it. And I had an executive from a large provider come up to the booth, and they were talking to us. And of course, I did my elevator speech and did the spiel, you know, all the things that Aaron pays me to do, trying to convince this person that we're running out of V4 and that there's something that they need to do with IPv6. And this is what this gentleman told me. He said, when is IPv4 running out? I said, well, I can't give you a flag date, but this is right about when it's running out. I told him about 2 years. He said, I'm leaving in three. And I said, "What?" I said, "You're leaving in." And it, well, you know, I'm oblivious to things sometimes. So, well, you're leaving in 3? I go, "What do you mean?" He said, "I'm leaving this organization in 3 years. Nothing will get done with IPV 6 before I leave. It coincides with this person leaving the organization, not their problem. They're not going to do it." That's the attitude that people are taking with this. They're putting their organizations, they're putting their businesses at risk based on their own personal situation. You know, it happens all the time. But you've got this thing happening all over the place. Take this word, go talk to people about it, do something about it. Everyone in this room, you have something different to do when it comes to V6. Some of you may have nothing to do. Some of you have an awful lot of work to do. But start researching it, find out what it is that you need to do, and get started. If you're the social media type, you can find us in these places. We tweet a lot. We keep an active Facebook page. We're on LinkedIn. We put videos up on YouTube. We do all of those things. If you like that kind of stuff, come find us here. This is a slide where I talked to you about participation. I told you that all of the policies in the community are set by the community at large. It is true. Anyone in this room, you do not have to be a member of Aaron. You don't have to be paying fees to Aaron or anything like that. Anyone in this room can participate in the policy development process that sets the rules of how we manage and distribute the resource at Aaron. You are the organization in that way. All you have to do is join a mailing list. There's a link here about where you can go find that at this participate link. It's free to join the mailing list, and you can participate in the policy development process that way. You can go to our public policy meetings and participate that way. If you don't want to travel to a physical meeting where we talk about policies, you could join our remote participation facilities where you'll see a video feed of the meeting, get audio feed of the meeting, and be able to join a chat room to interact with other people during the meeting, submit questions to the floor. We will bring your statement and read it right into the record of the meeting at the microphone for you. There are a lot of ways that you can participate, and it's very important that you do, because a couple of things are going to happen over the next few years. I'm only talking about V4 depletion and V6 adoption. That's big enough alone. That affects all of us. But the way that this is governed is potentially going to change in the next couple of years. Now that all the wonderful work that you've done has been realized by national governments around the world, and they can't live without what you've built, because their economies rely on it. Their government relies on it. Medical systems rely on it. The financial systems. Everything relies on the networks that you guys build and maintain today. Everything does, and you know it. Governments are realizing that. It's taken them a little while, but they're figuring it out. They're not so comfortable, perhaps, with the current governance model for this resource. So a lot of them are talking at the United Nations level with the International Telecommunications Union and other organizations about those entities entering into the governance of the internet. They're going to make a play at this. They're going to try to move in to the governance arena of the resource administration, domain name administration, all these other things. It's going to happen. But how it happens is largely up to you. So if you're interested in what that transition of the governance processes look like, you need to get involved and participate. And it's free to participate other than your time, and I know your time is money, but you don't have to pay a fee to participate, of course. So if you're interested in learning more, this is a high-level overview. I'm just telling you what's happening. Hey, this is happening. It's real. It's not a joke. That's all I've said up here. I spent the last hour just saying that. If you want more, tomorrow at 11 a.m., Matt Ryan, Zach from Aaron, right here in the front of the room. He's our lead systems person at Aaron. He is going to talk to you about what Aaron has done to deploy IPv6 at Aaron. He's going to give you an experience report. It's a very good report. You can learn a lot from it if you haven't done this yourself already. We started deploying IPv6 at Aaron in 2002, 2003. We did a lot of the hard work of contacting vendors, contacting providers, getting them to support IPv6 and doing all of those things. There are some things that support V6 very well today. There are other things that don't. And he's going to talk to you about those things and some other things related to V6 adoption. Also, on tomorrow at 2 o'clock, we have Owen DeLong doing an IPv6 guru session. It'll be a long QA session where you can talk about IPv6 deployment. Owen DeLong has talked to thousands of organizations about their IPv6 deployments across the globe. He's done that. And you can talk to him about his experiences. Owen DeLong is with DeLong Consulting. He's also with Hurricane Electric. And he's also an advisory council member to the Aaron organization. And you can meet with him there. And before that, you can meet with Aaron at our exhibit. Our exhibit opens up at noon. And it'll run to 7 p.m. today. And we'll also be there from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. tomorrow. Happy to talk to you about anything you want related to IPv4 depletion V6 adoption. And of course, we can answer questions here. But if you want to talk one-on-one, that'd be a great place to do it. That's all I've got. Thank you very much. So we can take questions then, Rudy? Does anyone have any questions that they'd like to ask?
Yep.
Happy to answer.
I think it was at the ISC BOF last night, but it might have been at a different place. It all sort of merges into a mush after a while, where somebody from Denmark stood up and said that Denmark has a national mandate to provide IPv6 capability, not just in the government organizations, but everywhere. Is there anything at all like that in the U.S. or Canada? And if there are, what bill number do I get in touch with my Congress critter and tell him this is important? Mm-hmm. If you want to be part of the next generation of the internet, if you want the United States to be part of the next generation of the internet, you better pass this bill. Mm-hmm. Is there a bill number that a committee meeting or something like that that we can press for?
To my knowledge, in the United States and in Canada, it's only been mandates for government networks and government agencies, not mandates on the private sector. And I haven't seen anything like that in either of those two countries. I'm not aware of a bill that's up for discussion right now. At the inside the United States government, the organization that oversees internet, or the department that oversees internet?
The Department of Commerce.
Department of Commerce, NTIA. That'd be a great place to talk to folks inside government. If you wanted to speak to your congressman, congresswoman about this, I'd welcome you to do that. Get up there and talk to them.
They're not men and women. They're critters.
They're critters. And Aaron is in Northern Virginia itself. And we've been up to D.C. a lot. And we've flown up to Calgary, and we've talked to the government there quite a bit about this. It's up to the government to decide if they're going to do any side of private sector mandate on this. There are people inside the industry that are scared to death of something like that, where you might think it would be a good thing. And if you look just 2 or 3 years back and say, okay, if the government had done that 2 or 3 years back, organizations that might have been afraid of that type of activity, maybe a large residential access provider. One of the most expensive things when it comes to their customer service is answering those phone calls from, you know, if a customer calls you, in their opinion, I've heard some of them say this more than 5 times, it's better just to lose them. And if the mainstream media, for instance, had picked this topic up 2 or 3 years ago before these guys were ready to say anything about it to their customers, it may have been bad for them. So some of them were worried about that. Other people would prefer the topic had been discussed that far back at the national level coming down from government. But they're very careful about what they invite government in to do, especially when it comes to the internet, because a lot of people look at the circuit switch telephone networks and all of those things and say, well, maybe we don't want the government to come in and make mandates about this. But we've reached a point where we're so close that I think most people would invite, you know, government to say at least something or at least discuss it. And I think that they are, but I don't know of any bills that are under review.
Yeah, and no that are, you know, that have it on their agenda or anything like that?
There's been some committees that talk about telecommunications and internet and those things, and I'm sure that the V6 topic has come up there, but not to the extent that we're hearing about it as the citizenry, where they're actually coming out and telling us things. You know, I don't want to get myself in trouble here, but look what we did for Y2K.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Look what we did when it comes to awareness coming from government for Y2K. Look what we did as government for the conversion from analog to digital TV signals just in the last year or two. Remember that campaign?
And how long it took us to do that.
It took a while to do that, but there was a big campaign.
There
hasn't been a campaign like that for V4 depletion, V6 adoption. And perhaps if you guys said something, some of that would change.
An interesting addition to that is a guy I work with likes to say that if we only had 6 months of toothbrushes left and no way to make enough for everyone, that it would be on the nightly news every night and people would be freaking out, but not with the internet.
Right.
My question is, you touched on this very lightly, but people have been running IPv4 internets longer than I've been alive. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about the kind of brain drain that's going to happen of that? You know, no one has, there's just less sysadmins who know how to administrate V6 than know how to administrate V4. And do you think that'll affect the quality of rollouts, the quality of the technology we see due to that inexperience?
There's certainly a need for people that get educated on deploying IPv6 inside networks. Much of what you're going to be doing with IPv6 is the same thing that you did with IPv4. The same security tools, the same methods of deploying the networks, but the addresses are different, and they are logically separate networks, the IPv4 network and the IPv6 network. There is some best practices information that's out there that'll be helpful to you, but since deployment has not been wide scale, you're not overrun with best practices information. Take advantage of every opportunity you have to see an experience report, to hear what other people are doing. Look for that stuff, watch it, listen to it. There's also some educational resources online that are free. Go there, start looking into those immediately. Give you a quick example. It's right in line with the question that you asked me. We go to a show called CompTel. Now, CompTel is where a lot of independent CLEC or ILEC, where small rural telephone companies that also provide internet access to their customers, will come together and they go to that conference. It's called CompTel. And I had an executive from one of those organizations come to the booth, and we were talking about it. And he asked the same questions, like, oh no, what about my technical staff? What are they going to do? And what do I do? And how do I support that? And da-da-da, and the whole thing. And the guy was completely flipping out. I was real happy that he was flipping out, but he was flipping out a little bit. And I suggested to him, I said, go home. When you go back to the office, sit down with your technical staff. And he said, well, it's one person. I said, well, sit down with that person and talk to them about what we just talked about. Give that person a couple of days, a week, if you can, to do nothing but just research this themselves. Educate themselves and research this online and see what they come up with. Well, I saw that guy at a subsequent CompTel, because we've been to five or six of these things. The guy came back to the booth and he said, you know what, I did that. I went back, I talked to this I don't remember the guy's name. Talked to his person and let him do that. And he said that their V6 operational today. It happens. I mean, you guys have been running these networks for years. Don't be afraid of V6. Everyone's gonna be doing it. Just go do some research, get yourself educated. There's some programs out there if you wanna go take a program somewhere and learn it that way. But most of you don't need to do that. Just look at the education materials that are out there, look at the best practices information that's out there, look at experience reports, and start playing around with it. Start testing with it. If your upstream provider tells you that they can't give you native V6, don't let that stop you. You can get a tunnel, and the tunnels are free right now. You can get a tunnel from a very large provider. They'll even give you IPv6 address space for free. And you can start testing and doing work that way. There are a lot of things that you can do. Just get started. Start playing around with it. Get yourself educated.
Along those same lines, mm-hmm. You said, you know, that there's a lot of best practices information out there. Something that is a topic that I personally found trouble finding information on is how abuse prevention changes radically from a V4 world to a V6 world, particularly in regards to things like real-time blacklist for email and things like that. Do you have any insight on if there's any working groups or things like that to try to evolve those into working with V6?
I don't know of any specific lists for those things. There are some good mailing lists out there. One of the best mailing lists for V6, I don't have a slide on it here or anything, and I'm not supposed to plug other organizations, but this is a community-driven project, so I can talk about it. There's this organization or this domain called CluNet, and they're running an IPv6
How do you spell that?
List. CLUENET, all one word, CLUENET. Go to a search engine and type in CLUENET IPv6 list, and you'll probably find it. It's run out of, I think it's run by Gert Dering out of Germany. And he is actually the policy working group chair, or has been in the past, at the RIPEN-CC for Europe. The RIPEN-CC is Aaron's sister organization for Europe and the Middle East. And he's been very active in that community, and he's helped drive a lot of E6 adoption, I think, over there, and so have many other people in the European region. But that mailing list is a really good one, so you can look that up. And there's some other information that you can find out there. When I said best practices information, I said that there's not a whole lot of best practices information out there because there's not wide-scale deployment yet. There's some out there. Go find that and research it and see what people have to say about it. But it would be a good idea to join a list like that. If you're in the university space, there's an Internet 2 list for IPv6. You can go join that. There are other things, too.
One of the problems that needs the best practices that I haven't bumped into yet. I went and got a tunnel at home, and 6XS very happily gave me a /48.
Yeah.
What I'm going to do with 2 to the 16th networks, the subnets, I have no idea. But it's kind of nice to have it. I put it in. I put in a dedicated a small machine to the to being my gateway and so on. And now I can SSH into any machine in my home via IPv6 from anywhere in the world. This scares the heck out of me. I'm personally studying up a lot on IPv6 tables so that I can harden that gateway.
Right. Security is a big issue for V6 because a lot of people are looking. They assume that security is different with V6 than it is with V4 because they heard early on when you create a new version of the protocol, what do? You want a new version of anything. You make improvements, right? You build in improvements for that. And one of the improvements that a lot of people heard about was better security with IPv6. But really what you're doing is you're using the same tools and same mechanisms for security. But there are so many products out there that don't have V6 support in them already that are in that security space. Matt Ryanzak, that's going to talk tomorrow at 11 o'clock here, did a talk at, is it Black Hat? What's that? DEF CON. He did a talk at DEF CON, and the emphasis was on security for IPv6, and he's surely going to be including some of that information in his talk tomorrow at 11.
I came in late, so I'm sorry if you already covered this, but... And I'm also asking this with full knowledge that it's yet another stalling tactic, but what if any moves have been afoot at Aaron for starting to try to claw back smaller net blocks and reissue them?
Mm-hmm. Now so you weren't here when I talked about Aaron's efforts to reclaim IPv4 address space.
Okay. All right. Okay. You can.
I'll just summarize it real quick. We do actively go back and try to reclaim IPv4 address space. The policy community a couple of years ago had reached a decision point to either have the registries more aggressively go after that legacy resource space or to create a policy that will allow them to transfer the space between one another, perhaps in a market. And they chose the latter. And there's a policy for that. And I can share that information with you after this and let you know exactly what happened, what the policy community did.
I'm the sole IT support for a small nonprofit that on occasion deals with HIPAA data. And given the questions asked about security and whatnot, how is this going to affect dealing with HIPAA data? And is there anything that's going to preclude people from just continuing to use NAT forever?
Yeah, so people can... You can build NATs on top of NATs on top of NATs, and some people are going to do that. They're going to prolong the adoption of IPv6 for as long as they possibly can, and there are going to be a lot of holdouts out there. But it is going to get messy. The more NATing you have to do, the messier it's going to get. It's going to get difficult. When it comes to when it comes to health information, government rules on HIPAA and all those things, I don't think that there's anything in there that's specific to which network it's on or anything. It's maybe you can check. I don't know if the federal government has said anything about that or not, but I would imagine that the rules are the same for any data that you're carrying on a V4 network as they are on a V6 network. But yeah, you can continue to do V4 NATs for as long as you want. At some point, there's going to be content out on the V6 network that's preferred to be reached over the V6 network natively. There are some examples of that. Anything that's latency sensitive, for instance, is going to be preferred over a native V6 network, or if you can get it, V4 without any carrier-grade NAT in it in the future to carrier-grade NAT. So there's going to be some incentive for even home users and small businesses to start moving to a pure end-to-end environment again. Not that they have that completely today, but you know what I mean. Once they start getting placed in NAT pools on the carrier side, latency is going to pick up and things are going to get messy for them. I think that the residential broadband providers know that, and they're preparing for a time where they have to talk to customers about it.
Given that the government, in the U.S. at least, is not really taking action per the discussions we've had already, is it something that Aaron could do? I don't know if you're allowed to do lobbying or at least maybe create petitions from IT organizations and companies that are looking at trying to get this move forward as a priority,
right,
to actually get the vendors to move. I mean, I happen to work at a vendor who is trying to address this issue right now, not on the hardware side, but on the software side. But even we're having issues trying to convince the engineering teams. We're going to go back, and we'll provide this back to the team members. But
right,
is this something that Aaron might want, rather than having a grassroots kind of effort,
right,
and have multiple groups trying to raise this, can we pool our resources and help you and your organization and providing our feedback and our kind of, yes, we do believe this is important and we want to help on going forward with that?
Now, there are a lot of organizations that are right where you're at with that. They do support the effort. They would like government to look at this more. The Aaron organization spends a lot of time in Washington, D.C. speaking to government. We do what amounts to lobbying without bringing attorneys with us, right? I mean, we go up there, we're able to get appointments because of, you know, we're a small nonprofit doing a big thing, and we're not trying to sell anything or get any special rule passed or anything like that. We're just up there spreading awareness. And we'll go up and we'll speak to elected government representatives to the extent they're willing to speak to us about this topic. Usually we'll get like 10 or 15 minutes of their time, and we'll do that. But we spend a lot of time speaking to hired employees of the federal government that work in Department of Commerce, NTIA, that work in some other agency, and talk to them about this topic and try to spread the awareness as much as we can. We do that in the U.S., we do it in Canada, and in the islands of the Caribbean that is inside of our region. But it's a tough road to go because they're so interested in other things. And they're going to become much more interested in this topic next year. It's going to take the V4 depletion event to wake everybody up. And we're only a couple months away from it, folks. It's going to happen soon.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about post-depletion and post-adoption for just a second.
Okay.
With the Y2, you mentioned these two events recently in the United States, the Y2K event and then, excuse me, digital television event. The Y2K event, the dates were going to, you know, you had a line in the sand, the dates are going to change this time.
Right.
There's nothing you can do about it after that. You've got to do it now. With digital television, the FCC eventually said, you know what, we're taking the spectrum back. You're not going to be able to use it anymore.
Right.
IPv4 could be used forever.
Yes.
And you can't control what people do with their networks.
Right.
Right? They own the wires. So they can do. How do you get into these organizations, or you know, what would you suggest that we do to tell people, can we just turn it off? You know,
yeah.
Get out of that business entirely?
Right. Well, you know what? There are people have talked about this, and one of the most difficult things with this V4 depletion event and the need to start moving things to V6 is that there is no flag date. And because we don't know, it's completely dependent upon demand. We can tell people at this point it's next year. We cannot, as a registry, give a date. We can't do that. We can't set any sort of date. So, for instance, if I told this room right now that the IPv4 resource, and this is not true, by the way, this is all hypothetical. If I told this room that the IPv4 resource was going to deplete on November 30th of 2011. And you all went away and you started making plans. And you started developing things and putting things together and started deploying V6 based on that November 30 date. And then it depleted on March 31st. What would you guys do? Your company could potentially lose customers. Your company could potentially lose contracts with the federal government, all these other different things. Who are you going to blame for that? You're going to come after me because I said that. You're going to come after the Aaron organization because we gave you a date. It was wrong. You made business plans. You lost money. It's our fault. And so we can't do it for that reason. And you're right. People will continue to use V4. There are two primary things that need to happen before we can say switch off IPv4. So if we reach a point where we said, okay, we need to switch off IPv4 completely, one thing that has to happen is all of the content on the internet has to be on the IPv6 internet. You can't as a provider tell your customers that you can't see this portion of the internet any longer. You just won't do that. So 99.9% of the internet has to be on the IPv6 network in addition to V4 network. Aside from that, we have to reach a point where you can walk into the Best Buy and pick up a device that you're going to bring home or to your small business and put into use on your network that it supports IPv6, that everything that you might buy that has an IP stack on it supports V6 in addition to V4. We have to reach that time, and when we do reach that time, we're about 5 to 7 years out. Because when you go buy that device, like I go today and I buy it and it only supports V4 and I bring it home, I expect to use that for 5 to 7 years. And if my neighbor goes tomorrow and they got the new V6 ones, great, you got a V6 one, you can do V6. I can only do V4, and I expect to be able to use that for 5 years. And my internet service provider knows that, and my ISP is not going to come to me and say, you can't use those devices any longer. They're going to continue to support them. There's ways that they can do it over the V6 network, and they'll do that, but they're not going to turn off V4 support because they have devices in people's homes that are in use that support V4 only, and they have to continue to support those. And there's content on the internet that has not migrated over to the V6 network, and they need both of those things to happen before they can do a cut over. And there's only a small handful of organizations that are going to make that decision. I don't know if any of you in this room belong to one of those small handful of organizations, but if you're a residential broadband provider and you control all the eyes, you and a couple other organizations control all the eyeballs on the network, and if you're a large content company and you cache or deliver a majority of the content on the internet, and if you're the backbones that tie all this stuff together for those organizations, you're the ones that are going to make that decision about cutting over to V6. And the rest of us are just going to have to say, okay, they're doing that. And it'll probably involve government if they ever do it anyway. And they'll go talk about it. And by the way, the meeting that happened in Washington, D.C. with the federal CTO and CIO and some other individuals, Aaron, some other organizations, I think it was in September, they actually are working on some documents right now. There's some working groups going on right now where they're working as a follow-up to this meeting, where they're creating some documents that will be released inside the United States that actually put dates on when certain things should be done. But it's going to be should for the private side and have to for the government side.
Okay. I think that this is a follow-up. I'm Alan Clegg from Internet Systems Consortium. As a follow-up to some of the comments that have been made about let's get the government to tell private industry to make IPv6 happen, I'd just like to say that I'd like to know that the people in this room actually think that that may be a bad idea. The more that we get government involved in telling us how to run our networks, we're doomed. Mm-hmm. If the government wants to tell the government we have to deploy IPv6 or we have to have dual stack or whatever by a given date, that's fine. We, as a network, as the internet, cannot be regulated by the government, whether it is the U.S. government or the ITU or whoever it is. We control our networks. We're going to continue to do that, hopefully forever, and to go in and have the idea of the government needs to tell us to tell private industry how to run the network. I just think it's a very, very bad thing. IPv6, absolutely, deployed it, have more IPv6 space at two fire stations than I have IPv4 addresses in the entire world. So it's a good thing. It does work. Thank you. We need to do it, but not by government mandate.
Outstanding. Thank you. And a lot of people are in the exact same place that you are with that, and then there are people that would like more government to get involved. But when we go talk to government as Aaron, we take a pretty hands-off approach. We don't go to them and suggest that they make legislation or they make mandates on private industry or anything like that. And even in the actions that they took in September and the documents that they're putting together right now, when they're speaking about federal government agencies, they're talking about mandatory actions. When they talk about private industry, it's all suggestive what they're talking about. But it's good that they're at least doing that.
Let me give you a scenario where we might get IPv6 conversion worldwide in over a period of, say, 5 years. The government of China decides that they want to go IPv6 completely because they can't get IPv4 addresses anymore. It's too much of a pain. So they mandate a conversion for all of China. All of China can now only talk to the rest of the world via IPv6. Mm-hmm. How long do you think it'll take the rest of the world to convert?
Yeah, and those types of things could potentially happen over the next couple of years. And China's already made some statements about a favor for IPv6 in certain areas. I don't think they've gone as far as what you just described, but it was a good example. I mean, it's very possible that some national governments will come out and do those types of things. Some national governments have been more active in participation in this space that we're talking about today than others. For instance, South Korea actually has laws on the books about how internet service providers can obtain internet number resources from registries. It's one of the only places in the world where that exists, but they've actually done that. And Japan made some mandates on private industry back in the early 2000s and have since backed off of those some. But it's very possible inside the next couple of years you can see something like that happen.
Hi, first off, thanks for the talk. I've been thinking a lot like that IPv6 is a lot like global warming. Everybody's a bit drained hearing about it and everyone thinks someone else should really get on doing something about it. And it's very reassuring to hear that a lot of people are working on it. Mm-hmm. So my question is, you said that one of the last 4/10s are going to be reserved for helping people move from IPv4 to IPv6.
Yes.
Why are we waiting until the last 4?
Okay. So the community actually passed the policy proactively. Where is it here? There it is right there. So it's a policy that's been on the books for almost 2 years now. So the policy community got on just after 2007 when this mandate came out, or this declaration came out from the Aaron Board of Trustees. It did a couple of things. It warned the community what was coming. It asked Aaron's Advisory Council, and it's an elected body by the community that advises the Aaron Organization and Board of Trustees on technology matters. It asked them to take a look at policies that might be passed to help organizations in the future that might not have access to IPv4. This is one of the policies that they worked with the community on and they eventually passed. And it sets aside this /10. It is in the policy that it will happen. It is also in the policy that Aaron will get an additional /8 from the IANA no matter what happens at the other registries, because there's that global policy that states that once the 6th one remaining is handed out and we're only left with 5, each registry gets one more guaranteed. And out of that guaranteed /8 that the Aaron organization gets, that's the one that they prescribed that we set aside the /10 from. So we're going to take a fourth of that 8, and we're going to set it aside just for this purpose. And this policy is not needed before then, because this policy is only needed when there's no more access of for organizations to get IPv4 resources from the registry. So they did have exactly what you described in mind, and they made sure that all those guarantees were in place before they set the policy so it would be available.
So at this point, could you refuse to give IPv4 blocks to people who aren't simultaneously working on IPv6?
No, we cannot. We cannot deny you IPv4 address space because of IPv6 holdings that you might have, and vice versa. There's separate networks. When we review your request for additional or new IPv4 addresses. We're only looking at what you currently have in the V4 space to determine if we can give you more. We don't care about your V6 holdings. If we're looking at a request for a V6 address space that you're requesting, it's not necessarily dependent upon the footprint that you have on the IPv4 network. We consider them separate in the request process.
Sorry, let me rephrase. Okay. You guys have a lot of power right now since you have the last IPv4 addresses.
We and
you
the can other five really, registers, yeah.
You can, sure. You can force the issue by refusing to give IPv4 addresses to people who aren't trying to move to IPv6.
That could happen, but it would have to happen through the community. So there, in the Aaron region, there are only 50 people who are not allowed to participate in the development of policies. Those 50 people are the Aaron staff. We're a secretariat staff. We implement the policies that are passed by the community. Anyone outside of that group of 50 people can participate in this process and create a policy that you just described if they so chose, and there's a formal process that the community uses to move those things through. No one has asked that that no policy has been passed that says that we close off access of the resource to organizations yet.
Awesome. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Please come.